Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is Ellie Steele. And tonight I'm going to read from my new book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. But I'm going to read from the book is set up into six different segments for the essays. There's 16 actual chapters, but there's also another part to the book, the larger part to the book, actually, which is called Essays and Insights. And these are essays that I've written over the years, and each essay in the book is dated, the date that I wrote it, and to give it a historical perspective, as well as a time frame, you know, to show that, you know, they were when they were written, of course. And and at this point, I've kind of you know, I established in, like, again, like I said, six different segments. The first segment was national politics. Second was international politics. The third was satire, political satire. The fourth segment was mainstream media. Fifth segment was patriotism, and the sixth section was metaphysics. And these are all different essays relating to those different categories. And there's 166 of them actually in the book, selected out of approximately 500 that are on my website. But I chose them for relevance and you know, preference, and also I had to select them for economy because the book was getting very large. It's 364 pages. But I'm grateful. I've had a couple book signings now and good promotion. And people that have read the book have enjoyed it. And I've gotten good feedback from them finding that people are enjoying the book. So that makes me feel very good. And as a author, you really hope that's the best thing that can possibly happen, is that somebody enjoys your work. So I'm going to read tonight on the patriotic section or patriotism, and a couple of brief essays, more than a couple, but most of them are brief. In the book, they don't go into extensive, long-winded, 20-page essays. These are brief and to the point, and I hope you enjoy them. My first essay tonight is An American Exile, and I wrote it in dated 2/13/2005 was when I wrote this. This is under the Bush administration, and we were going through hell at that time, and we're still going through hell beyond belief. But during then, during 2005, we were already into two wars, and Bush was the country was just a nightmare. And thank God we survived so far. But let me continue. This is called An American Exile. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-abridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep ancient land your story's pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. And that was from poet Emma Lazarus, who died in 1887. The New Colossus. This poem was inscribed on the Statue of Liberty. There is a growing movement of self-exiles in the United States. I know because I am one and have spoken to many other liberals and moderate conservatives who consider themselves cast adrift and disconnected from the new ideals and values of this country. False ideals have replaced pride of achievement of this nation and individual liberty and freedom. The grand ideals of this country that stood noble before the world founded our stable government and encouraged the diversity and industry of our people. In shame of error and ignorance, the United States eventually accepted its wrongs and strove to lead the world in the achievement of the ideals of freedom and liberty through the slow, steady method of debate and committed resolve. But now our leaders are leading us and the world into the acceptance of hypocrisy, militarism, and economic and moral bankruptcy. My next essay, or insight, if you will, they are labeled as essays and insights. They don't quite qualify as essays, then they qualify as insights. My next is called The Radical Soul. This was written on December 4th, 2004. It's interesting. I look at the date now and I recall when I wrote this, but my father, that was my father's birthday actually, December 4th. And my father passed away in 1990, but in some way I just so happened that I wrote this on that day. Something makes a radical radical. I haven't identified that certain attribute or detriment to the radical character yet. As I keep seeing more injustice and abuse of power and starving, crippled, homeless misery of billions of people around the planet, I get angry and feel the need to do something about correcting the wrongs I see. I have discovered that it is a whisper silent surge of emotion creates a tear or makes me angry enough to videotape soundbites like George W. Bush or Tom DeLay, Bill Frist, John Kerry, Joe Lieberman, and virtually every American politician. I think radicals are born, not made. I think a radical has always been a radical in his worldview. He or she cannot accept things that aren't just or are hurtful to humanity or other inhabitants on the planet. Some radicals are violent. The most famous and most effective radicals were nonviolent. I believe many people are born radicals. They are the men, women, and children who refuse to bend to the will of nature or suffer the indignity of physical or mental abuse and demand just retribution. A radical is anyone who will courageously fight back against anyone or anything that they determine is a wrong against them or others. As a radical, I weigh my options and interests and willingness before I take action. Will I go to the courts? Will I write letters to a company's president or our government officials? Will I storm the Capitol building? I am still trying to decide how radically radical I really am. I think I am like others who are waiting for their soul's whisper to turn into a shout or a scream until they can no longer sit still or remain silent as the scale of justice is breaking under the weight of injustice. If the injustice has a spring or a pulley or a rope or a crank exclusively for itself, then perhaps you may consider whether the remedy will not be worse than the evil. But if it is of such a nature that it requires you to be the agent of injustice to another, Then I say break the law. Let your life be counter-friction to stop the machine. What I have to do is to see, at any rate, that I do not lend myself to the wrong which I condemn. My last paragraph was by Henry David Thoreau, Civil Disobedience. It's so extremely interesting to me how we can, how we've grown into a country of where everyone thinks the majority is, you know, the majority stands for something. But in reality, the majority stands for nothing if it's silent. And it stands for nothing. It refuses to stand up. Or if the majority is deceived, you know, and which it is by the mass media, and by the government, and by themselves, they deceive. We deny and live in denial so often. But I wrote this essay on January 21st, 2005. It's called A Majority of One. I am a majority of one. So is everyone who is rightly committed to justice, freedom, universal law, and universal brotherhood. I need no one to convince me of my mission in life or try to deter me from it. I am as great or as insignificant as I think I am. Greatness was never bestowed upon anyone by someone else. I am my own majority, and I act according to my own beliefs. I am the President, Congress, and Supreme Court of my own life, determining and creating my own laws, expecting to reap their effects, either good or bad. A man or woman can do no other if he or she has truly evolved into a being with an erect stance and a greater intellect than their primal ancestors. We are morally obligated to believe in the divinity of our souls and our mortal and spiritual purpose if we believe that our creation was inspired by an omnipotent and loving God. All who stand erect and steadfast in their beliefs of justice, freedom, and universal brotherhood will never bow to tyranny. They will continually fight for the preservation of their own rights and dignity and for the brotherhood of mankind. Anyone with spiritual conscience looks at what is being done by the U.S. government and is outraged by its involvement in the slaughter and genocide of millions of innocent victims in the name of freedom and liberty and American ideals. The real reason for conflict by the U.S. government is to benefit corporations who profit greatly by world wars, death, and destruction. These soulless corporations thrive by perpetrating and escalating civil wars, military coups, famines, environmental disasters, torture, fraudulent elections, contract killings, bribery, assassination of foreign leaders, spying on citizens, systematically stripping U.S. citizens and citizens of other free countries of their freedoms of self-government and basic individual rights, quash all protest with massive arrests of innocent people. Action from principle. The perception and performance of right changes things and relations. It is essentially revolutionary and does not consist wholly with anything which was. It not only divides states and churches, it divides families. It divides the individual, separating the diabolical in him from the divine. That last paragraph was from Henry David Thoreau and Civil Disobedience. In the book, I follow up with the next essay called The Power of the extreme minority. I wrote this on April 13th, 2005. I have never been considered a mathematician, but common sense and basic math skills brought me to a startling observation. If one considers that there are approximately 6 billion people on planet Earth, and maybe 1% of all these people are involved with governments and militaries, that would mean 60 million people controlling the entire world. When we further consider who controls the governments around the world, we can honestly reduce that number to less than 100,000 banks and corporations, their CEOs and board of directors, 100,000 times 10, estimated number of active directors on each board. All right, so that means about 1 million people who influence 60 million people in government and military, who control 6 billion people around the world. Now we must consider who controls the 1 million top executives and board members of these major corporations. The only power that contains these titans of avarice is the media. Now consider how very few people control the media around the world, and you have the truest common denominator. Without too much research, we can probably all name 10 media outlets that are not directly operated by governments. I will state the ones I know: ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, Al Jazeera, I may be wrong about Al Jazeera, Clear Channel, Comcast, Adelphi, Bloomberg. I am sure there are others not quite as well known, but for the most part, in the U.S. as well as other countries, the chances are there are no more than a few major networks or news sources that broadcast news and entertainment. As for the print media, there are no more than 100 legitimate national and international magazines and newspapers with journalistic integrity and print real debate and commentary on current and important issues. Most other newspapers and magazines are hyped up right or left wing biased rags, sensationalism, gossip, nudity, and crudity. These other magazines and newspapers are led by an editorial staff and a publisher who are controlled by one of the major media groups. So my final deduction is less than 100 people control the world media and control the world corporations, who control the world governments that control the entire population of the planet. This equation is essentially the simplest way I know of to define the extremely powerful minority, who now rule over the extreme majority of people throughout the world. My theory is based on my basic math skills. People with greater mathematical skills could fine-tune this formula, but I doubt the overall difference would vary too much, and the results would reveal that the people of the world should already know that too much control over this planet and our lives is held in too few hands. We of the extreme majority must understand our collective power to see through the great veil of deception and denial put upon us by the very few who comprise the extreme minority. We must simply take back the individual and collective control of our lives, which would render the all-powerful minority completely powerless. My next essay is entitled "Can You Feel the Wind of Change?" I wrote this back in February 14th, 2005. Might have been Valentine's Day, I guess. I don't know. But February 14th, 2005. Can you feel the wind of change? A cold Arctic wind has been teasing the northern and New England states this winter. First, it came blasting in from Canada for more than a week in December and subsided for a short while in January. Then came back again in a vengeance to keep winter's warriors on guard and vigilant. Perhaps it's just my blue state imagination, but it seems to get coldest just when Bush announces another cockeyed plan to give another dyslexic speech and the New England loses another military base or defense contract. If I were more suspicious, I would suspect the White House boys are playing a little political football with the millions of citizens in the states that didn't vote for W. Oh, you might think that the great Connecticut Senators Joe Lieberwurm and Dud, both Democrat, and the great Senators Teddy Kennedy and John F. Kerry would be most upset and fighting mad, reflecting the rage of their constituents. But no. Instead, they are happily complacent in their happy jobs, accepting no calls to their offices or giving no replies to inquiries from their constituents. They don't have to worry on 2006 when they need our vote. Did anyone see good old W. kiss Lieberwurm on the mouth at the State of the Union address? Does anyone remember Senator Chris Dud of Connecticut holding the Bible for G.W. Bush's first inauguration in 2000? And recently we witnessed him grinning from ear to ear in the presidential platform in 2005. I watched Dud a year ago on a C-SPAN televised ceremony celebrating Dan Quayle as a great former vice president. Senator Dud was standing around shaking hands with Dick Cheney and G.H.W. Bush. The Connecticut Republican Party has never supported anyone except convicted pedophile Mayor Phil Giordano in 2000 to run against Lieberwurm or Dud because they already have these two Democrats in their pockets. Two New England Democratic senators who are more worthy of the Republican of the Year award than Dennis Hastert or Bill Frist. The cold Arctic wind seems to be coming down again from Canada, a country ruled by its Liberal Party. And the Almanac says it might stay with us through March. But I suspect it will get warm again by June or July, when the Northern Blue State Patriots begin to wake from their long hibernation and welcome back the heat of revolution. My next essay is called, I wrote in October 2. I think I'm going to back just a step here. I'm going to, this essay was not mine, but I put it in, and it was actually written by John Adams. It was a letter. But it made it the first essay in this segment, in this section, because I believe this country is going through a revolution at this point, and I believe there's a call to patriotism, but not to fight in foreign wars, not to fight in Iraq or Afghanistan, but to fight against our own country, against our own government, against our own apathy. All right. You know, it's time that we understand what the revolution was about to begin with, what we were fighting for then, and what we should be fighting for now. Yes, everybody knows, there was slavery, and everything was crappy then, and we stole the land from the Indians, and blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's true. That's true, we did all that. And I'm not proud of what we did there. I had nothing to do with that. But at the same time, you had men and women, but men who had the idea based upon the enlightened thought. They understood that they couldn't eradicate everything or change everything, but they had to compromise to a degree, but what they could not compromise on was the ideal of separation from Britain, the idea of revolution, because the grievances were so outrageous okay, the actions of the King George were so oppressive that these brilliant men, and I say brilliant men, John Adams and Sam Adams, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Ben Franklin, and the list is on the Declaration of Independence. But these men got together, formulated an idea, put their fortunes together, put their lives on the line, put their honor on the line, and decided that they would forge ahead and create a revolution. And they did, and they succeeded. And this is one reason why, explained by John Adams. It was written in February 13th, 1818. Dear Mr. Niles, the American Revolution was not a common event. Its effects and consequences have already been awful over a great part of the globe, and when and where are they to cease? But what do we mean by American Revolution? Do we mean the American War? The Revolution was effected before the war commenced. The Revolution was in the minds and hearts of the people, a change in their religious sentiments or their duties and obligations. While the king and all in authority under him were believed to govern in justice and mercy according to the laws and the constitution derived to them from God of nature and transmitted to them by their ancestors, they thought themselves bound to pray for the king and queen and all the royal family and all the authority under them as ministries ordained by God for their good. But when they saw those powers renouncing all the principles of authority and bent upon the destruction of all securities of their lives, liberties, and properties, they thought it their duty to pray for the Continental Congress and all 13 state congresses. There might be, and were others who thought less about religion and conscience, but had certain habitual sentiments of allegiance and loyalty derived from their education, but believing allegiance and protection to be reciprocal when protection was withdrawn. They thought allegiance was dissolved. Another alteration was common to all. The people of America had been educated in a habitual affection for England as their mother country, and while they thought her a kind and tender parent, erroneously enough, however, for she never was such a mother, no affection could be more like Lady Macbeth to dash their brains out. It is no wonder if their filial affection ceased and were changed into indignation and horror. The radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections of the people was the real revolution. Sir, your humble servant, John Adams, February 13th, 1818. And this source was from the American Primer, edited by Daniel Borstein. Copyright, University of Chicago, 1966. Publisher was Penguin Inc. But I felt it necessary to put this in as the first essay in this segment of patriotism, because patriotism is revolution. If your government is wrong, if your government is oppressing you, if your government is stealing from you, if your government is destroying your country, all right, rather than protecting it, rather than protecting you. And that's not what it's doing. And it's time for a revolution. As it was in 1776. There's another essay here that I was going to read, but I won't. It's called the Redeclaration of American Independence, And but I, it is the American. I'll pass on this one because it's rather lengthy, and as clever I thought as it was, I wrote this back in February 23rd, 2005, when the Bush administration had just won its second, stolen election, and we are enduring a horrible, horrible, horrible year under George W. Bush. And it was my Declaration of Independence to G.W. Bush. So, and that's an essay. But I'm going to go on to another one, a little shorter. This one I wrote in October 24th, 2007. It's called A House on Fire. If everybody remembers the great disasters that have faced this nation, natural disasters that faced this nation back a few years back, 3 years ago, and actually throughout this first 21st century, first decade of this this century. But this essay was called A House on Fire. The horror of the California wildfires is a harsh awakening to millions of Americans that our well-being and security could be lost overnight through fire, flood, wind, earthquake, or any natural force of nature or man. America is not immune to natural and man-made disasters. Our resilience as a people is what has made us great. Our resilience in the face of our greatest adversities is what keeps the rest of the world in awe of us. There have been many disasters in American history, and the American people have always come through stronger and wiser. We see our fellow Americans suffering cruel sacrifices by the winds of Katrina and Rita, and now at the winds of the Santa Ana wildfires. We feel for them and have deep concern for their suffering. Americans have survived civil war, slavery, revolution, world wars, fire, flood, quakes, volcanoes, and nationwide civil unrest, but somehow America has pulled through. Why, I am not certain. I believe it is because we demand it of ourselves and of our nation. We demand self-reliance. We demand self-sacrifice. We demand our freedoms, and we demand our right to live and pursue happiness as a free people. The time has come again when our individualism, pride, and confidence in ourselves must save our society and our nation. We cannot rely on our government. We cannot rely on our schools, we cannot rely on our churches, anything or anyone to deliver us from disaster as a people and a nation. It is up to each of us to be our own leader. Each of us must rely on each other, but mostly upon ourselves. We must have the immovable faith of our immigrant and pioneer ancestors and the steel determination in achieving their vision. We must believe again in the best of ourselves and in what our nation can be and will be. My next essay is called The American Patriot Party. I wrote this back in February 18th, 2005, and it's still on my website. I left these so I can verify, so people can verify that they were written at that time. And the website is lasteelshow.org. The American Patriot Party. I've given this idea a lot of thought, and perhaps more than it merits. But I was watching the movie Luther the other day and realized that if what he did caused the complete reformation of the Christian religion and breakup of the Catholic Church, then what I am about to propose at least merits some attention, and there already does exist an American Patriot Party. You can see that at AmericanPatriotParty.com. Those who have read my articles and have kept abreast of my current thoughts should not be too surprised by this statement. America needs a real political party. You may think, oh no, L.A. has gone off his nut, and you might be right. But nothing revolutionary has ever been accomplished by rational, impatient, or rather, by rational, impassionate, or inactive people. There already exists a party called the American Patriot Party. But only those in the Patriot movement know about it. What is a revolutionary thought, word, or action? It has become almost ludicrous not to think in any other terms today, when you see every country but the U.S. changing governments either in a coup or free election. Small, oppressed nations and free countries are arming themselves to defend their people and property from Bush's aggressive and imperialistic foreign policy. Are Americans so apathetic and sated that they no longer care what their leaders are doing? Our leaders are destroying our economic and physical safety with global conspiracies and mad ambitions of world domination and suspension of freedoms and human rights. American patriots must unite in spite of their conservative or liberal convictions to contain and stop the great divide that is tearing apart our nation into a hell of civil war. This mad idea of a new party made up of real patriots, a person who loves, supports, and defends his or her country and its interests with devotion, that source is Webster's Dictionary, is the only viable method of restoring the strength, dignity, integrity, and integrity of the people and the ideals of the United States. We need an American Patriot Party, folks. We need one, a real one. We need real American patriots. I consider myself a patriot. I consider anybody who stands up against the Bush administration and who stood up against those and all of the vile administrations that we've had and who's standing up against this Obama administration, all right, for its insanity, its stupidity, its incompetence, and its conspirators. It's absolutely conspiratorial. There's no question about it. Obama's plan, the blueprint, is a globalist blueprint, and unfortunately, you know, he's deceived everybody. We're headed down a primrose pass, folks. And we have to fight back. We have to do it no matter how. Whether we have to talk about it, we have to organize, we have to, develop a system, develop some kind of thing like the Revolutionary Fathers did. Get out from under this mess. My next essay is called The Cause and Effects of Independent Activism. I wrote this back in May 25th, 2005. 2005 was a good year for patriotism for me. I wrote a great deal of my work that year, probably because I was so damned angry at the way things were going. And you got to remember, I've had my talk show, my radio show since 2003, and I've had my television show since 1999, and I talked a bit about it here, but mostly about my involvements as an independent activist, which is what I consider myself to be. I am am an independent activist. I choose my battles carefully after much research and validating my heartfelt commitment to a cause or to an injustice. I do not take my involvement lightly, and I try to understand the motivations of both sides of an argument before I take my own stand on an issue. I have spent great amounts of personal time and money producing a weekly television and radio program to try and inform and expose the issues for what they are. I have made documentaries on nuclear power plants, the adult entertainment industry, environmentally safe engineer energy producing alternatives, Washington, D.C. peace rallies, and local and statewide protests. I have championed indigenous rights in Connecticut and have challenged publicly the state and local officials who have denied recognition to Connecticut Indian tribes. I have sponsored public seminars with a panel of experts on the Israeli genocide of the Palestinians. I video documented and supported the candidacy of Connecticut gubernatorial candidate and national activist Ned Cole in 2002. Who was the only independent television producer invited to film the 2002 Democratic State Convention and interview the candidates and the delegates. I promoted a Democratic candidate, though I maintained my political independence to any party. Ned Cole truly stood for the ideals of honest and fair government and was the only candidate to publicly denounce John Rowland as a criminal and his Republican administration as completely corrupt. Ned Cole's public indictment of John Rowland proved to be valid. Since then, John Rowland resigned as governor and served a prison sentence. And John Rowland was the governor of Connecticut back in 2002 and 2003, and resigned, I believe, in 2004 when he was indicted for corruption and served a jail sentence. In March 2003, I began my weekly radio program on commercial radio station WQQQ 103.3 FM. I was one of the first and only liberal talk shows in Connecticut and the only consistent voice on commercial radio in New England that vehemently, publicly attacked G.W. Bush's policies and the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. The LA Steel Talk Radio Show preceded Air America by preceded Air America by more than a year. I withstood personal attacks and the inability to gain wide commercial sponsorship because I continue to attack the sacred cows of conservatism and pseudo-liberalism and condemn the Bush administration for their dictatorial policies and criminal actions. My program, though heard only in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and upstate New York, has attracted internationally known journalists, authors, activists, and politicians as my guests. Ed Asner, Jesse Jackson, Greg Palast, David Ray Griffin, Jim Mars, Alex Jones, Ned Lamont, David Icke, Cindy Sheehan, etc., as well as many local and statewide activists and politicians. I have done this all as an independent producer without any financial support from any foundations or corporations. The effects of my work have been numerous and have aided, inspired, and encouraged other national, statewide, and local activists and organizations. My listeners have supported many of the causes I have advocated and have brought the books of the authors I have featured. Countless numbers of people have been affected, both positively and in case of corporate politicians, negatively by my efforts. I urge all who read this to join or get involved with a movement that serves to bring justice, freedom, or social and environmental changes for the betterment of humanity. Individuals can topple governments, create new institutions, educate the world, create the next great invention, create the peace plan for the Middle East, or create a crime watch organization in their neighborhoods, or help the homeless in their town or city by volunteering or donating money, or simply by acknowledging a homeless individual or a fellow human being in the need of kindness and compassion. The work of all individual activists around the globe have inspired change and revolutions. The causes independent activists take on are many and diverse, but it is through these committed men and women
who feel the need to fight against and expose the corruption and injustice in their societies and to educate the masses of these issues. Those successful social changes are achieved. Activists fight against the indifference, cynicism, ignorance, and hatred of all who try to drown out their voices of concern that protest against injustice, genocide, war, and the devastation of global ecosystem. Activists are the frontline soldiers who cry out the alert and stand guard against the onslaught of predators intending to harm a sleeping citizenry. Activists are arrested and routinely censored by the media and those who sponsor corporate terrorism, the torture and systematic murder, the murders of millions of helpless people and the extinction of countless animals and vegetation around the globe. Human rights activists, animal rights activists, activists, environmental and political activists are noble and concerned individuals who are worthy of great respect. I am an independent activist because I can best live and operate my company with interests and interest independently. I prefer my own pace of action. I prefer to choose my own causes to promote, but I highly encourage anyone to join or work with a concerned citizen group to help these good and brave people who put their principles ahead of their own personal safety. As activists, they cannot help themselves from shouting out against the wrongs that they see. Independent activists live by their own code as individuals who care about their fellow man. We are the idealists who dream of a better world and hope that in some way we can make that dream come true. My last essay on patriotism. I think I'll pass on that one. I'm going to go right into the metaphysics. I think this may be my last one. I'm not sure. We've got about 10 minutes left. This essay begins the metaphysics segment of my book. And, of course, for those of you who I'm sure you know by now, I'm reading from my book, Naked at the Mic. Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. This next essay I wrote in March 2nd. 2005. It's called A Thought About Conservatives. All conservatives are such from personal defects. They have been effeminated by position or nature, born halt and blind, through luxury of their parents, and can only, like invalids, act on the defensive. That was written by Ralph Waldo Emerson. His essay on conservatives from Conduct of Life. On the grand design of nature and the divine order, Emerson is one of America's greatest thinkers and most respected writers. His relevance and concepts are absolutely timeless. One can only imagine what he would have to say about the conservative pundits and think tanks of today, and if he were alive and writing today, what the conservative media would be saying about him. I'm certain the majority of the members of the media have never read Emerson, just as they have read none of the writings of the great liberal thinkers of our American heritage, Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and so many others. Ignorance is bliss is the motto of most conservatives. They think that what their parents thought, or do not think at all, or they think what they are told to think by their government, or priest, or preacher, or teacher, mainstream media, or a political party, without inquiry or investigation as to the origin of fact or fiction. They dread the pains of industry it takes to think for themselves. They prefer to parrot the cliches and actions of the damned generations, calling them great and noble, These generations of slavery and segregation, monopolies, world wars, massive poverty, and imperial tyranny, rather than listen, read, and cherish the wisdom of true sages. Great sages combated the blindness, stupidity, and selfishness of dynasties and conservative governments and societies to bring about social reforms under free, liberal governments. The greatest horrors facing America is the possibility of Emerson's work and the work of other great liberal thinkers becoming banned from schools and purged from the history of the American people. Conservative ignorance got Charles Darwin expelled from grade school science. Well, will Thomas Jefferson be purged from American history classes? Ralph Waldo Emerson already has been expelled. Even the brilliant revolutionary works of Christ have been perverted and edited into ignorant rants of evangelical cult leaders of the Christian right who call their followers to a false heaven through the malevolent manipulation of fear and faith. Christ's teachings are with us because of courage, courageous, far-thinking, open-minded people who preserved his works and recorded his teachings throughout the Roman persecutions of the early Christians and through the dark ages of barbarians who burned and plundered all civilizations and made slaves of the conquered people. The extreme conservatism we now face in America is the same barbarism, that's the same brutal force and ignorance that burns books, humiliates liberal ideals, and destroys all dignity and the advancement of mankind. Conservatives prefer to view the world and foreign ideas and cultures as their enemy, rather than open their closed mind to ideas of peace, compassion, and the goal of human perfection worthy of eternal reward, rather than eternal damnation. There are two more essays I thought I might read before tonight, before we end tonight. Maybe I can do that. Sometimes you just can't find the right words. I wrote this on April 15th, 2005. I have tried to express myself in so many different ways, but regardless of my methods or mediums, I always encounter major resistance. Indifference, anger, contempt, arrogance, guilt, dislike, fear, self-consciousness, overconfidence, lack of confidence. These are just a few of the great walls of resistance I encounter when I try to express myself to others. I know they are the same problems most people have expressing themselves, but sometimes when all these things strike at once, the effect can be numbing. I get this way often when I try to write a piece about current issues that so desperately need expression, but I cannot seem to create the objectivity needed to adequately interpret to an audience many of these issues. I can't help but feel outrage when I think about or try to analyze the Bush administration's policies. I can't objectively view the madness behind the rationale for anything this administration is doing. So I create an attempt at objectivity, which I later find is impossible for me to do, and either forget the entire issue or concept and leave the keyboard or camera or microphone and move on to another thought that appears for the moment more comprehensible, and I can look at more objectively. I often brood over certain issues like the John Bolton nomination for the UN or Negroponte's appointment for the chief of the U.S. intelligence agencies, or the massive failure in Iraq and the insanity of the far Christian right, or how Tom DeLay is still allowed to be majority leader at the House of Representatives, or why G.W. Bush is the president when he stole the election through total fraud. I can't remain objective, especially if more information comes to me to validate my suspicions. I cannot rest until I have expressed my anger or my biased perspective of the issue to someone, either here on this website or on camera or shouted out on radio. So if I seem rattled or overly opinionated on some subject or other, and you are wondering what I am getting at, or what is the point of my article, then I apologize, because I have failed once again at accurately and objectively expressing myself on these issues. I wrote that in April 15th, 2005, and still holds true today. My last essay for tonight is called I'm Running Out of Hatred. I wrote this on February 15th, 2005. I woke up this morning with a sense of loss and emptiness that I couldn't understand until now at this writing. It became apparent to me after listening to Rush Limbaugh for 5 minutes today that my sick and empty feeling was caused by my utter contempt of what the Democrats and Republicans did in the last election. My rage and contempt was rooted with deeper than I had originally thought. It was in the center of my soul, that place that the Christian right so wrongfully claim as their hallowed and sacred ground, that place that a true patriot knows well and frequents often, that center of the conscience that identifies the wicked from the godly. Thoughts of war, death, fear, corruption, and cynicism veil our center soul until we become lost and mad with anxiety, eager to accept fate or a fool as our guide. I realized today that my outrage was more of a cover-up for my total sense of helplessness in the struggle between good and wicked politics. I have been rendered powerless except for my motor skills in combating the wickedness that has invaded my government. Since the Democratic concession of two fraudulent elections, I have come to realize that I no longer have even the simplest democratic freedom left, the right to a free and fair election, and the assurance that my solitary vote will even be counted. So today I've replaced my hatred for the Democrats and Republicans with repulsion and pity, the way one looks at a dead man who betrayed everyone he knew and died from his own reckless excesses and is mourned by no one. I no longer fear or hate Bush or the Republicans. I only fear that subconsciously my healthy rage has turned into a sick indifference, and I will care less and less about the world and people around me until I become like they who I once so abhorrently despised. I wrote that on February 15th, 2005, shortly after the nomination of G.W. Bush. In January, I think it was January 20th that he took office. And I was just disgusted, and still am by American politics. So anyway, I leave you tonight. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you get my book. It's called Naked at the Mic, The Survival of the Liberal in a Time of Peril. And you can get it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Or you can go to iUniverse.com, which is the publisher's website. And on iUniverse.com, there's also an e-book that you can download for $9.99. I hope you do. So I want to thank everybody for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the show. We won't have a show tomorrow, but we'll be back next week, next Wednesday, next Wednesday night. So... good night, and you can join us also on WQQQ.com Tuesday night, 8 to 10 o'clock Eastern Standard. That's our FM show, please do that. And Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday next week, right here. So good night, and have a good week.